If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in DC. Today, my returning guest is David Pepper. He's the author of the books Laboratories of Autocracy and Saving Democracy. There is so much to cover today, so before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now, please enjoy my conversation with David Pepper. Welcome back to the show, David.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
How are you doing? How are you doing these days?
I'm pretty good. I'm actually kind of excited. I'm going to the convention. So
oh, you are?
Which is, a lot more exciting prospect than it was probably about a month and a half ago. So I think all the good energy, I think, will make for a better convention. And you're talking to someone who was there in 16 in Philadelphia, which was the most bizarre thing with all the hacks and a lot of the discord. So hopefully this will be better. I think it will be.
Yeah, we've got such a different landscape right now, and there's so much to talk about. First, I just want to remind listeners, I said so in the intro, but you are the author of Laboratories of Autocracy and the other book, Saving Democracy. And so I do want to ask you, we've discussed those books before. I want you to kind of just tell me a little bit about Saving Democracy, and then what do you see playing out in our current political climate that aligns with what you wrote in that book?
I'm glad you brought that up, and I did one of my whiteboards about this the other day. The whole point of both books was to make the case, which I think people see very clearly now more than we have in the past, that we cannot win the long battle for democracy even if we win the federal races we prioritize. If we don't go beyond that, as we've learned painfully, mm-hmm. we still see extremism going crazy like we see, and that's because for the far right, the major place, the front line where they advance their attack on democracy and their extremism is in the state houses of America. Mm-hmm. It's not Mike Johnson. It's not even Mitch McConnell. He likes to control the courts, but pretty much those guys don't get legislation passed. It's hundreds of people just like them in states. And so the opportunity we have right now, there's some good news on this, but it's coming from some painful lessons in the past, is to take the energy at the top of the ticket, which is wonderful and which we need to use to make sure Trump doesn't win and we elect Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. But we can't have another year like 2020 where we only win there. We beat Trump. We didn't flip a single state house. Mm-hmm. What happened? All those state houses gerrymandered. They deprived water from voters and polls in Georgia. All the crazy stuff they continue to do happened after we beat Donald Trump. And the lesson is that's necessary but not sufficient. Mm-hmm. We have to go down some layers. And here's the opportunity that I'm excited about. Tim Walz, I guess, is the first one who started, but we have successfully defined the other side's crazy right-wing toxic extremism as weird, mm-hmm. okay? Maybe that's the best word for it. Mm-hmm. And J.D. Vance and Trump certainly personify weird pretty well. But here's what we have to do. The state house Republicans in Ohio are weirder than those guys. They literally are. And they're not just weird by talking. They're actually passing laws mm-hmm. that are equally weird or equally toxic or equally extreme. So as we run now for the next 90 days and have successfully showed America, I think, that this agenda that J.D. Vance is all about, you know, anti-women, anti-freedom, all of it, if that feels weird to you, which it should, and I think it does for a lot of people, know that there's a state house not far from you where all that weird stuff is actually becoming law. So focus on those races. With as much, you know, energy,
yeah.
Because we have to win at the top. But if you really want to stop the weird from becoming law, like it did in Mississippi, led to Dobbs and so many other examples, you got to also start holding these extremists accountable at the state house level and knocking them out. And that's sort of the theme of the book. And the good news is I think we have an opportunity to do that if we do a lot of smart things in the next 90 days.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, we've got this really popular last night on MSNBC, which I did listen to, which I don't always watch because they piss me off. But I do like some of the opinion shows. So somebody, and I don't know who it was, referred to Kamala Harris as like a really great pop culture candidate. And I agree. She's not only pop culture, but it's like there's this alignment with her coming into the race, everybody getting behind her. And, you know, part of the reason I think is because she is a woman, and I hate to say it, but optics are a lot. She's a good looking woman. She's very well spoken. She's a badass. And then we've got this kind of like short 90-day thing where, you know, initially it was Biden, but now it's her. And so we've got this quick turnaround. And I feel like because we're this culture of instant gratification, this actually kind of works. So when you have such excitement at the top of the ticket, does that usually go down to the state houses? Because like you said, in 2020, it didn't. But I don't think we wanted calm, and we did get calm. But now it's a different ballgame. So does that translate? Yeah. Does that translate?
I think you have to take it down the ticket intentionally. Mm-hmm. So what was the frame? And, you know, I was thrilled to beat Trump. We saved our country.
Yeah.
But when we said never Trump, we almost gave cover to voters to think, okay, well, I'm voting for Biden. But if Trump's the only problem, I'll just vote for Republicans the rest of the way. And right. That's what happened. Millions of people voted for Biden, and then they voted for Republicans for Congress or especially state house. And so I think we have to be smart enough to say it isn't just Trump. It's not. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's more clear now than 4 years ago that MAGA is up and down the ballot. Maybe then it still felt like Trump was sort of this uniquely bad, you know, candidate. But now, after January 6th and after election denialism, it's easier to make the case that look at your state rep. They're passing all the same crazy stuff that Trump wants to do with Project 2025. In many states like Ohio and Florida, we're already living Project 2025. They've already enacted it in many cases. But I think we have to be more intentional and not make the mistake of leaving the impression that it's only Trump. And sometimes Joe Biden, as much as I'm a fan, is – he would literally say things like, and I remember this thinking, oh, don't say that. Well, a lot of all the Republicans I know, they're pretty good. Trump is the problem.
Yeah, right.
And that's giving cover. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if people deserve that cover, wonderful, say it. If it mm-hmm. was true, I would say it. Mm-hmm. But it's in most of these state houses after years of gerrymandering, these state reps, I mean, J.D. Vance is like a more intellectual version than the state reps that are doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. Right.
And I think every state house candidate needs to say, like I said, oh, you think Vance is weird? Wait till you see what these guys passed in Ohio.
Yeah.
And they need, and so that if that higher level brand is working at that level, draw it down intentionally. And I actually think the more the higher ups broaden it, the better. And if you find yourself saying, because you think it helps your own candidacy, well, everyone else is fine except my opponent, stop, slow down, and realize you may be hurting people down ticket in the way you're saying that. And yeah. It's in this year, it's also not accurate. And how do we know that? Because when those Republicans won those state houses in 21, they went to work doing the exact same big lie driven anti-democracy stuff that Trump would have done. And everyone that got in there, because we had said, oh, they're not as bad as Trump, most of them acted as badly as Trump would have. So mm-hmm. We can't make that mistake again. And by the way, I don't think we are. When I see the excitement from Kamala, it's exciting. The risk is that we do something that we've done in the past that we only think it's about one candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't sense that right now. I was just on the phone with a state rep running a date in a swing district. I was in an event last night with a state rep in Warren County. And what they're telling me is they actually feel a lot of energy on the ground.
Oh,
and they think it's helping them. So the caution is we can't fall into the trap we've fallen in the past that we think by winning the most important office that alone saves the day. Yes, mm-hmm. It's the most important office, but the true victory for democracy, here's a couple examples. It includes, you know, Arizona is two seats away from flipping the state house.
Mm-hmm.
Now abortion will be on the ballot in Arizona. Go flip the Arizona state house. End the North Carolina gerrymandered supermajority by picking up a few seats. Gain some seats in Florida. End the Ohio supermajority. You're not going to turn all these states blue, but there are very important, tangible goals that could change policy in these crazy right-wing states that with the energy from Kamala Harris and Tim Walz right now, I think are actually quite attainable, let alone races like flipping the Ohio Supreme Court, you know, ending gerrymandering Ohio, protecting abortion in Missouri and in Florida. The point is, use this energy and the broader frame that they're real weird and real toxic and real extremist and intentionally draw it down all the way through your ballot. That's how we really have a big year.
Yeah, and I mean, I think in terms of their, you know, the Trump presidency kind of gave everybody a civics lesson, at least people who were interested in paying attention, and including myself. You know, there are certain things that I just didn't know until Trump came along because he messed everything up and upset, you know, the apple cart. It was like, oh, this is how it works. Oh, this is what we need to
yeah.
do. And we're still learning. I mean, social media helps that because there are people like you doing whiteboards. There are people who are explaining how government works to people like me who unfortunately didn't get the benefit of civics when I was growing up. And I hope that, you know, I hope that as we progress that we do bring that back, because if people understood how government worked, they would be more likely to vote. But I just wanted to ask you, you know, I keep hearing Ohio is in play, and I want to see what you think about that.
So, you know, I'm glad to hear that. And this is going to sound counterintuitive. Would I love it if Kamala Harris won Ohio? Of course. That'd be amazing, like with Obama.
Yeah.
That's the end of the election.
Yeah.
Do we need that to have a great year in Ohio? No.
Right.
Although I hope they make a play. I'm tired of the old school thinking that you only go to the states that are really close or that mm-hmm. you're headed, I think has been a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the Kamala Harris Walz energy in Ohio, which is palpable, even if – you know, so they've purged so many voters in Ohio. Ohio is harder to win than it was in 12.
Mm-hmm.
But if Kamala Harris and Tim Walz get to, let's say they weren't to win Ohio, but let's say they narrow the Biden margin of loss from 8 to 4. That's a shared victory. It's to me very hard to imagine Sherrod not winning if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But that also probably means that our effort to end gerrymandering passes handily.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Huge. And equally importantly, we are the only state in America where a Supreme Court is up for grabs. Right now, we're on the other side of a 4-3 right-wing majority. If we have a history of our Democratic candidates overperforming the top of the ticket, if we were to lose Ohio by 10 for the presidency, that would be hard to overcome. But if we lose, let's say they don't win, but they lose by 4 or 5 and Sherrod wins by 4 or 5, we have a shot to flip the Ohio Supreme Court. And that Ohio Supreme Court will be the court that decides the meaning of reproductive freedom that we wrote into the Constitution last year and the meaning of fair districts. So when I think about Ohio being in play, it's in play, right? Because of the energy, I think these major league democracy races beyond the presidency are now in play in a way that I would have been quite worried about a month ago because of what Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are doing energizing. And even if, let's say we force Trump to spend money in Ohio, which I'm told he's doing. Mm-hmm. And even if we don't win Ohio for the presidency, which would be the best case of all, if that energy means that we win these other things, this would be a banner year for Ohio, not just Democrats, for democracy, because mm-hmm. you start ending gerrymandering and fixing that court, you start to undo some of the worst things that are pulling apart states like Ohio.
Wow. So we have to take a quick break, and we'll be back after this message. Hey, this is Kimberly, the host of the podcast you're listening to right now. If you like this show and you want to support it, please visit patreon.com/startmeup. You'll see all the different tiers. Make your choice. Support the show today. Thank you. You know, I wanted to just ask you, you've kind of talked about it and touched on it, but I'm just talking on a national level. In your opinion, how do you see that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have changed this race? I mean, it's evident that stuff has gone on, but like, what do you attribute to this big change? Why are people so, why is she so popular in a pulp, you know, the pop culture arena? Why?
You know, one thing I have to think we all have to think about is why was there such an impression that she wouldn't be?
Yes.
Because I actually think that's something that should bother us. The whole pundit world, it was like this little whisper, oh, she can't do it. Mm-hmm. She can't do it. Who was saying that? Like, where was that coming from? And I wish I could say it was only Republicans. Like, everyone who was saying that, who was whispering that, needs to, like, literally walk away. Because they couldn't have been more wrong. Now, it's not over yet. We got a long way to go.
Right.
But, like, that really... Because I honestly interacted with Kamala Harris a bunch in Ohio in 2018. She came here to help Sharon, our governor candidate. She was our state dinner speaker. She was here all the time. She was great. Mm-hmm. She did things with my staff, meaning just being a human and being thankful, that almost no one else ever did.
Wow.
So all of us were like, we always liked her.
Yeah.
And then she's had 6 or 7 years to get better, or 4 or 5 years.
Right.
To get better at being a candidate than when she started as VP.
Yeah.
And then the other one is I think she's just like, I think she was naturally good. Mm-hmm. She's gotten better. She's been out, and there's nothing in politics like repetition and learning and getting better. Clearly that's the case. She's been at the highest level of American politics. And I also think that the switch over just, you know, earlier, what did everybody say in the polls? We wish we had a better choice than these two. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I'm a Biden fan, but clearly the polling was saying people weren't happy with either. Mm-hmm. They were too old, people thought, and like Biden's like a, I'm sorry, Trump is a retread of his old campaign. And not only has Kamala been really good, but I think the switch really puts a focus on how what a terrible candidate Trump is.
Yes, it does.
Now he's the one. They picked on age for 2 years. Now he's the one who looks old. He can't keep mm-hmm. things straight. He's lying all the time. It's bizarre stuff like Hannibal Lecter. So all of a sudden, without Biden to focus on and the fact that he had a bad debate or makes a mistake every once in a while, and you have someone who's not doing those things mm-hmm. and happens to also be effective and inspiring and a barrier breaker, which I also think is really important.
Yeah, yeah.
The spotlight is now on just how terrible Trump is. I would argue that he's a far worse candidate than he was in 16, where at least he had a mm-hmm. forward-looking something.
Yeah.
Now it's about retribution and revenge and bizarre stuff. So even people who voted for him, I would think, would be thinking, he's not sounding like the guy that I thought would be good in 16. His campaign is strange. It is strange. And then I think the biggest mistake in hindsight, and I was saying it as soon as it happened, was J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance didn't bring any – the moment he announced it, being in Ohio, I said, this is a gift to Democrats.
Right.
The guy brings nothing new, and he also – at the very moment that Trump was trying to run from Project 2025 and abortion bans and IVF bans, he bear hugs a guy who is the personification of all that stuff.
Yeah.
So they really like – so sort of a – if you and I had talked in June, or let's say the day after the Biden debate.
Yeah.
If we had all said all this would happen, it would have been like we can't be that fortunate. There's no way.
Right.
and the sequence of things that have happened, and J.D. Vance is a big part of it, because that cut off Trump's, it kind of confirmed the worst of Trump, you know, the extremism, the crazy right-wing stuff, the IVF stuff, and every bizarre thing Vance has ever said, and it cut Trump off at the moment he was trying to separate from all that stuff, and, you know, he tried to say, he tries to sort of minimize his view of abortion and bans. Well, all that got cut off the minute he picked Vance. Yeah. And I think that the combination of the two is why he's gone down and Kamala's gone. Here's the best news, and I'm going off for a while here. The bounce has yet to happen. Conventions are when bounces happen.
Yeah.
So my hope is, knock on wood, that the campaign and the Democrats have a great plan to take what has been sort of almost a very natural growth from a transition, but without any major league events that all of America's watching. Now we have a chance next week to take what has been sort of a natural movement and really, like, you know, hype it up by doing it through a great convention. So I think there's still some upside to go.
Wow. You know, I mean, and then there's the idea, like, I posted this on social media last night, that in 2022, the Republicans killed Roe v. Wade, and there was this red wave that was predicted, but there was a huge turnout in the midterms. I think they described it much like a general election turnout, which prevented the big red wave. Unfortunately, yes, there were some, you know, they did flip the House. But right. We've got a woman at the top of the ticket now on the first general election where abortion is a big deal. And we've lost we've lost Roe v. Wade, and I think that's going to add to the desire and the motivation and all of that. But, you know, working with that, the things that J.D. Vance is saying about women, you know, I mean, I am literally the postmenopausal female, which I don't think you should not be referring to women as females, because females can literally be batteries. But, you know, but it's like evidently, according to the podcast host that JD, the guy was talking to, said, you know, postmenopausal females, the whole reason they're a fucking alive is to take care of the grandchildren. So if you're going to go on that wonderful trajectory, it means you're born and you have children and you have to take care of your children. And then when you get older, you have to take care of your kids' children. And it's all, your whole life is nothing but taking care of children. And that's your only worth. And so, you know, and then of course there's the childish cat lady thing, which exactly that's what Taylor Swift is, right? So, I'm just wondering, it's not just the women of Ohio, but like women in, you've got your finger on the pulse of this a lot of times. So, you know, how are women in red states feeling? And especially women who are Republican and may have voted for Trump. How are they feeling about
that? So this is the other, and this is why I think we're seeing the explosion of energy since the switch. And I think a lot of it is, honestly, it's a continuation of what we've seen since Dobbs. So the thing I've been focused on, you know, until the presidential came up, was this remarkable win streak where you're supposed to lose everything when you have the White House. But Democrats have not been. You know, we didn't flip a single state house in 20. We flipped a number of them in 22. Our direction, that was the first time in 60 years it ever happened.
Wow.
We have George Santos replaced badly when he leaves. We flipped an Alabama district because of the IVF decision that was a Trump district. All over the country, you are seeing these, you know, we win the Michigan the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. You saw what happened in Ohio in our specials. Like, it's been this incredible winning streak at the level of politics that usually we don't pay attention to, but we have been. And so I think a lot of the explosion right now, I think that there was something about the Biden-Trump matchup that the army and the energy that led to that was just not seeing enough to get excited about. The minute it switches, I think all the all that post-Dobbs energy, which has led to this counter-historical winning streak for democracy and freedom and abortion access, now it's continuing and it's channeled right into the Kamala Harris campaign in a way that it was clearly, as you said, I think she's a woman. She's next generation. She's breaking a whole lot of barriers in her run. So that excitement, which I think kind of had a lid on it because they didn't, it just clearly wasn't translating into the Biden campaign. The excitement that's been excitement. Let's say it's built on a lot of negative feelings. It's anger. It's in being insulted, but it's also seeing that when people rally, they're winning. So it's a combination of things. I think it's now when it was sort of being almost, there was a lid on it. at the presidential and all the doubts about Biden, now it's channeling right into massive excitement. And so I think what we're seeing, it wasn't like it was new. It just was kind of disunified, not where it needed to be. And once the green light came that Kamala Harris is a candidate, I think all that energy is being channeled right into it. So it's just a continuation of it. And like you said, in Ohio, how do we see it? We saw it in about 18, I think the number is 18 counties that voted for Donald Trump voting for reproductive rights last November. Hmm. And that wasn't men, folks, although and I'm sure some men switched it. Mm-hmm. That was women in red. And I'm not talking about the suburban counties only. I'm talking about conservative counties, like kind of libertarian type counties that don't want government telling them what to do. They voted also for reproductive freedom and against a governor and a party and everyone who told them to vote the other way. And I think that is a sign, again, that women after Dobbs are showing up, conservative women, rural women, not just suburbia. And in our state, at least, you know, a whole lot of counties that someone like me is used to seeing being red, yeah, were blue for reproductive freedom last November. And yeah, that is mainly going to be a woman and young voters showing up in bigger numbers, mm-hmm, in a 23 election cycle phenomenon.
Yeah. And I mean, I know David Hogg was so into Walz before Walz was chosen. In fact, that was my introduction to him. David was like, oh my God, this guy is so great. And then, you know, the more I looked at him, and then he called everybody weird, and it was like, this guy is the guy. He's got to be the guy. And he is the guy. Yeah. And now I want to ask you, we talked briefly about this the last time, or more actually, I should say at length. In your book, Saving Democracy, you gave all kinds of examples of what we could do. So I wanted to ask you now that we've got, you know, 3 months left, or I don't even know, is it 3 months anymore? It's about 3 months, a little less than three months.
A little less.
What can people do to make this like a blue tsunami?
So a lot of things I like people to do should have started earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, I always talk about, you know, how if you're on a nonprofit board or you're a mayor, you should use your full footprint to register voters and all that. Mm-hmm. You can still do some of that. That's all. If you go to my website, savedemocracy.us, or my Substack, I talk about some of that stuff. But right now, you know, what are we, mid-August? What I'd say is your ability to obviously help financially if you can, top of the ticket, but remember the state house candidates in your state, help them. Yeah. That money goes a long way. If you got a swing congressional race, same kind of thing. Yeah. But right now, we're going to win this thing because their voters show up with more excitement than their voters. So the other thing I would recommend, whether it's through your county party or the local candidate you know, or the you know, state party, become a volunteer to knock on doors, mm-hmm, and to make phone calls. If you're someone who doesn't like to do that stuff, or you're in a place where you think you're in pretty good shape, postcards still help. Mm-hmm. Texting does help. The best thing is knocking on doors. And if we have an army – and by the way, one of the great things about the – Harris campaign is not just the money, it's the volunteer, mm-hmm, shifts, mm-hmm, that people are signing up for at every event in Arizona or Michigan. Those shifts, and we, by the way, one of our big problems in 2020, because of COVID, Democrats couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's one reason why we didn't win down ticket. We weren't knocking on doors to talk about the whole ballot. Mm-hmm. So getting to doors, doing calls, but the best way to get someone to vote, to change the data shows it. The best way to get someone to actually vote who may be a kind of a sporadic voter is a door knock. Hmm. And so whatever you can do in the next 90 days to get to do that, you know, and know that when you do that, you have the moment to say it's not just about Kamala Harris, although let's vote for her too. Mm-hmm. It's about voting out the Arizona Supreme Court justices who wanted to take women in Arizona back to the 1850s or something.
Right, yeah.
It's about like Florida winning that ballot measure. It's about winning the Supreme Court of Ohio. You have a much better chance doing that when you're knocking on doors than just about anything else you do. So anyone who has the ability to do that, not everyone does, but if you can do that kind of thing, huge, makes a huge difference. And then after November, then start thinking about, okay, I did that late in the game, but going forward, what could I do to, mm-hmm, much earlier on have similar conversations because I happen to volunteer at the food bank or do other, mm-hmm, things. So, but that's in the last 90 days, that kind of direct volunteering to get turnout up. We will win if we're more energized than they are. I think Trump is having trouble energizing. If we can take our energy and turn into turnout, I think we have a very good day on Election Day.
Okay, so since you said that, this is my last question. I know you're, you know, you're not psychic or anything like that, or maybe you are, but either way, do you think we're going to see a big blue wave? Do you see that happening, like a huge over 300 electoral landslide?
You know, my goal is not to try and predict. I mean, here's my advice to anyone listening. Let the positive polls make you feel good that mm-hmm. we can win. Mm-hmm. Believe the negative polls so that you know we can lose. Mm-hmm. And work accordingly.
Yeah.
One thing that happens is everyone likes to embrace the great polls and reject the bad polls. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the way you win. I've seen good polls, and a week later, we lose the election.
Right.
I know in Ohio, Republican candidates in 18 on election weekend were told they were going to lose the election to the Democratic slate, and many of those Republicans won. Mm-hmm. So my attitude is, Let the worst polls mean you take nothing for granted. Mm-hmm. And if the good polls make you feel like, hey, we can win, great. Yeah. Outside of that, just go work. And then we'll know what happens when it's over. But that's it. Like, it's close enough. Even the polls that look good right now are 1 or 2 points.
Right.
Who the heck knows how they're factoring in turnout? Mm-hmm. So it's good enough that we clearly can win. We can have a very good night up and down the ballot. But it certainly is tight enough that you could also lose, and that's why everyone should get to doors. Because what will take us to the place where the better was actually what happens, it will be if we have the same kind of turnout, frankly, we've consistently had since Dobbs. If we can repeat that in a presidential cycle, then while Trump is like meandering around and not really doing anything, doesn't really have a field operation, mm-hmm. I think. If we can do that, then I think we can have a good night.
All right. Well, you know, I think we're going to, as long as we all vote, my listeners know not to get happy, not to get complacent. But, you know, I think everything is pointing, because, you know, people are saying this is kind of like Obama in 2008. And I think it's even more because at that time we were kind of rebelling against the whole Bush administration.
Right.
And then we had this hopeful candidate that was electric and exciting. And I think that's happening again. But I think the stakes are so much higher because obviously this is a fascist. We are on, you know, we're very close to autocracy, dictatorship.
I was just going to say that Donald Trump believes, probably rightfully, that if he doesn't win, he could end up in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The whole Republican Party, if he loses, I think implodes.
Wow.
Because the brand is ruined. The money is being diverted to him. It's not. So here's the caution. It feels good.
Yeah.
But we are against someone who clearly will do anything to win. Anything. And if he knows he's going to go to jail if he loses, which he probably thinks, mm-hmm. that means he doesn't have any hesitation to break more laws mm-hmm. to make sure that doesn't happen, since he's probably going to jail either way. So we have to be prepared for truly insane. And so two things from that. One, I'm not part of these conversations, but obviously this is where your lawyers and your voter protection and everyone else should be thinking about what do we do in the worst case scenarios of true voter intimidation and worse, and disinformation. That's all coming, mm-hmm. okay? Because they are desperate, and the consequences of them losing are for them unthinkable. And the second half is, and this will sound a little bit rosy, the best way to avoid some of their worst laid plans from happening is to win by so much they're irrelevant.
Yes.
So that Donald Trump tried to get a guy to change 11,000 votes. I don't put it past him again to make that phone call.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's 100,000 votes, he can't make that phone call.
He can't do it. Yeah.
So the closer it is, the more everything they try and do with intimidation or denialism or blaming an X or Y or Z, that stuff gets less and less relevant or even attempted. Mm-hmm. If it's such a blowout that even Republicans like Mitch McConnell say, you lost, guys, it's over.
Yeah,
but
if we
get dangerously close, let's say Pennsylvania is a 1-point lead on election day with a bunch of votes out coming in, mm-hmm. which by law they're allowed to do, they will literally by 11
yes.
p.m. that night start yelling fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think that our attitude has to be, we feel good, but we are up against people who do anything to mm-hmm. win, and we have to be prepared to fight that in court and everything else. But we also, the best way to avoid that is to make it so that it's just not close enough to even Like, they'll try it anyway.
Yeah.
But it won't be credible at all.
No, no. Well,
if the exit polls are a 6-point lead or, you know, the margin is halfway through the night is 100,000 in Georgia or whatever it is. I don't want to get carried away. In Pennsylvania, at least. Then it's like, sorry, it's over. Everyone's saying it's over. And if you look like clowns after the January, you know, after 2020, you look even more like clowns if you're trying to negate an election that's a total blowout. And that should be our goal. That should be our goal, because I think it avoids a lot of the things they may otherwise be tempted to try and pull off.
Yes, too big to rig is how we got to look at it. All right, it's always so good talking to you. And before I let you go, will you please first tell everyone where to find your books and then tell everyone where to find you?
Yeah, so I'm mainly – you'll see me on two places where I'm most active – at David Pepper, still on Twitter, and then at Substack, also David Pepper. I do about an everyday update on something. You can go to my book, mainly, you know, ask the local bookstore. SaveDemocracy.us is sort of a website that's dedicated to that last book, so you can go there. And just so folks know, Saving Democracy, so it's called, the website is SaveDemocracy.us. The two books, the nonfiction books, are Laboratories of Autocracy, Saving Democracy. You can get them online at really any of the big stores, but you could also go to your independent store, your library, and hopefully it's there as well.
Very good. And I think everyone should, because we should all know what to do. And as David said, you know, after the election is over and we have won, we're just going to make that assumption without being complacent. See what you can do in the meantime, because we, you know, obviously the Harris administration is going to hopefully, you know, secure up some of these things that are loose, but it's up to us too, because as we keep saying, you know, it was, whether it was Mueller isn't going to save us or, you know, whoever's, it's us who saves us. So
absolutely,
we have to take that. We have to take that responsibility. And like I said, it's always really great talking to you. Thank you for your time.
Of course. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC Health/whatsyourwhy.